My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
That's so beatniky. I'm still not used to it. We just changed the name of our show to Arts and Seizure from the Mike and Judy Show. And the theme music has changed, although I'm glad the voice of Reed Paley
is back.
It's back. He's back.
He is the voice of Mike and Judy.
He is.
He's more the voice of Mike and Judy than Mike and Judy.
Pretty much.
The artist formerly known as Mike and Judy.
Mm-hmm. Reed Paley. His records are available everywhere, and he's super talented, and you should buy them.
So, Judy, I missed you last week. You were out hunting ghosts in Provincetown?
Okay, so we thought, my friend Julie arranged a ghost tour. We like looked up all this stuff on the internet. So we went to all these haunted spots in Provincetown. So we get to the Unitarian Church, which used to be used as a morgue. And we're looking up at it, and Julie's telling me the story of it. And I see like this undulating figure on the left. And I was like, oh my God, it's a ghost. So I like, I'm not brave, and I ran away. And so did she.
It's very Scooby-Doo.
So, but then when my boyfriend came to town a couple days later, I was like, I'm going to show you where the goddamn ghost is, because he doesn't believe in ghosts. So we went back to the Unitarian Church during the day, and there's a rainbow wind sock there on the side. So
it was a rainbow wind sock, and you ran.
It was actually, Spiro called it the ghost of gay pride past. Anyway, but enough about my vacation. I'm really excited about our guest today.
Danny Bland, who has played and worked with some of the scariest bands imaginable, much scarier than your Rainbow Windsock.
about an equal to.
So, and Danny Bland, we're celebrating your brand new novel, In Case We Die. And, of course, you played and worked with the Dwarves and the Super Suckers and lots of sub pop bands over the years. And we're glad to have you here.
Well, nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
We had a killer gig Thursday night at Manitoba's Bar. Danny read from his book, and it was quite charming and funny. And that was a real beat happening.
It was.
How's the book tour going? You've been chewing up the map. You've been everywhere.
Yeah, it's been going great. I went down the West Coast first, and now I'm fully ensconced in the East. I'll be here. I'm going to Boston Peabody, Massachusetts on Monday, and then I'll be back here in Brooklyn at Book Court on Tuesday, 7 o'clock.
That's great. Did your
here we go.
What? Who?
You're a tour manager for all these bands. Did you just like arrange your book tour like?
No.
You didn't?
No, Fantagraphics did.
Oh, my God. You have a book company who did a book tour for you?
Can you believe it?
Now I'm green with envy.
This is we hear it a lot. You know, most authors come on, they want to bitch about their publicists and their publishers for not setting it up. And I mean, you're a punk rock guy. You're DIY. And
right.
Your tour is like so happening. You're hitting so many more cities than most authors do. You know, I mean, you know, problem with the business is there's two kinds of authors, are guys like you and Judy and I think kind of hustle. Then they're the people who sit on their couch and wait for their publicist to get them on Oprah.
Yeah.
You know, and you're out there doing it. It's great.
Well, and I had a lot of help. My tale of woe as an author is not a tale of woe at all. And it's most infuriating to most writers. So I don't tell it very often.
It's okay. It's good. It's good to know. I mean, my hopes were so dashed. You know, I'm writing.
I could tell you the story of how I got this book published. It would infuriate you.
Please
infuriate
do.
Away.
Also, you have a great publisher, Fantagraphics, yeah. Usually known for comics. I love them. Yeah. Tell us how you got the book published.
First time author, first novel. Wrote it. So, you know, that part happened.
So you wrote it before you sold it.
Well, yeah. And then I sent it in, and I always, as soon as I got done, I thought of Fantagraphics right away because it's such a Seattle-centric mm-hmm. book, and you know, they're the the biggest. Well, I don't know of any bigger publisher that actually lives in Seattle or works out of Seattle. I'm sure there probably is.
But there's other publishers there, but I think that they're the biggest.
No, Fantagraphics is
the most notorious one.
Absolutely, Rolls Royce. Yeah. I mean, obviously known for comic books and graphic novels, right. And I mean the great artists that have come out on Fantagraphics, and to see them doing a novel. I mean, immediately, it's like when you used to work for Sub Pop, what Sub Pop used to be,
yeah.
You knew you could buy it based on the label.
Exactly.
Which is kind of an old school way of doing things. We don't buy something because it's on Random House, but you would buy something that was on Stax Vault Records, Stax Records.
Yeah.
You know, you'd buy something that was on Impulse or Blue Note, and Fantagraphics, you know you're getting quality. I think it's fantastic. Publishing is missing that.
Yeah, you know it's going to look fantastic at least.
Yeah, it does.
That's what they do. But so I have a manager, this woman named Rachel Flotard, who's universally beloved, and that's why I work with her, because I'm not so often.
I'm taking notes on this.
And the first
beloved.
Place we sent it to was Fantagraphics, and they loved it, and they published it.
They got it everywhere. I mean,
and they got it everywhere. Yeah.
Do they have many other novels? I don't.
They have. They've been doing novels. Here I am dropping the ball and not being able to name any of them right now, but that's because I'm selfish and self-centered. And don't
the only concerned. Novel that really matters is In Case
the
We Die.
The latest one they put out is In Case We Die.
And also, a man after my own heart, you went the distance in producing this audio CD, not your normal audiobook.
Right.
This is a cavalcade of stars. I mean, look at the people who are on here. Dave Alvin, Greg Dulli, Duff McKagan, Lee Ving, Wayne Kramer, Mark Arm, Eddie Spaghetti. I mean, lots of Sub Pop people from the Super Suckers, Near Friends, but also Steve Earle. We're going to hear a little bit of that later. Dave Alvin, you work with Dave Alvin a lot, too?
Yeah, I'm his tour manager, and I've primarily been working with him for the last, I don't know, eight years?
Let's go back for a second. Let's go way back. I want to talk about the dwarves.
Okay.
And I thought we'd spin a dwarves track for all the uninitiated who haven't been privy to the dwarves experience. Thought we'd give them a blast, and let's talk about just what the hell happens on a dwarves tour.
Well, in the dwarves tour is funny because I was in a band called the Best Kissers in the World in Seattle.
That's a lot to live up to.
And
did you have a kissing booth? Did you have a kissing booth? Was that like your merch table? Was it a kissing booth?
I was invited to leave the band and go to a treatment center because I was completely out of control, and it was the right move to make at the time. But while I was in the treatment center, about 2 weeks in, I got a call from Blag, who was a friend of mine, and you know, I tour managed them and sold merch for them at times, and he said, when you get out of the treatment center, come to San Francisco and join the Dwarves. And at the time, that was like someone calling and asking to join the Rolling Stones, because they were my favorite band in the world.
Yeah, I love the Dwarves, too. They were always great, but asking you to come out of rehab to join the Dwarves.
Right.
I mean, was that on, like, the scheduled, you know, the recommended?
It's probably, I don't recommend it to everybody, but you talk to your counselors about everything, and so I didn't. And my counselors were not hip to the Dwarves.
They probably thought you were going to.
But they said,
join a band
if you're
going to
go
people.
Join a group and get a job as a musician, then that's probably a good thing. And they signed off on it. But like I said, it was 92, so it's not like they could have Googled the Dwarves and found out what they were.
So
up
they probably never heard Skin Popping Slut.
No, they. I don't think they had blood guts.
Tell you what, hey Joe, why don't you spin? What do we have queued up, Danny?
Everybody's Girl.
All right, why don't we spin the Dwarves? Here we are, Arts and Seizures.
Kitty calls me on the phone to say she's all alone and needs somebody there. Crystal sees into the future, tells her that she's an asshole, she'll have right to really care. I sit and wonder if we are sharing a different world, and all these naked emotions running around me swirl. I'm in love with everybody's girl. Look at Brenda there with Luke, giving him the boot. Oh, but Kelly's standing by,
Everybody's girl. Oh yeah. Everybody's girl. Everybody's girl. In love with everybody. 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 Everybody's
girl. I love when. I love watching people take their first bite of Jesus Christ.
This is fucking ridiculous. Yeah.
it's like magic. The punk rock goes on, the pizza arrives.
Yeah, and it's like the stinky cheese extravaganza of deliciousness.
And that's it. That's Arts and Seizure, paid for with pizza.
It's like a pizza fucked a fettuccine.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Man.
Pizza
yeah.
fucked a fettuccine. Well, that sounds like a dwarf song in the making.
Yeah, I think it was from the second
one. Did you ever get to see the dwarves, Judy?
No, I've never.
I mean,
seen
those shows were famous for nudity, violence, and very, you know, 10 minute sets, 15 minute sets, and a bass drum would be flying across the dance floor.
We never played for more than 15 minutes when I was in the band. And I didn't get nude, but there was a lot, I participated in the violence part of it.
Yeah,
you're nude adjacent.
The dwarves were great, and they were really they were a threatening band. They were to me one of the last great punk rock bands because there was an element of danger seeing them. Wasn't sure who was going to get clobbered with the microphone. Blagg was a great frontman, also a great singer too. It wasn't up there shouting.
Well, anybody in the front row could get hurt, or anybody on stage could get hurt. any random show, and it happened often.
That was a lot of fun. That last song. Was not, you know, it's nicely produced. They sort of went to like a little kind of a slicker kind of production because those first records, boy, do they sound rough and wonderful.
And I had nothing to do with that song. It's just the one I wanted to hear.
So how long did you last in the Dwarves? It's amazing that band was sustainable at all, given the way their shows were going.
Yeah, I was in it for 2 years, something like that.
And you road managed the Super Suckers for quite a long time. You managed the Super Suckers.
Yeah, I managed the Super Suckers for probably right after I quit playing in the Dwarves. And we sort of had planned to self-destruct, and I carried on with that plan. I retired because I was since I was a kid and playing punk rock, I always said that when I turned 30, I was going to stop playing. I don't know why, but when I was 17, it made sense.
Right.
And so I turned 30. And I said, okay, I'm retiring, and I went on to road manage the Dwarves the Super Suckers and become their manager for. I don't know.
And they stayed on the road. Those guys toured hard all the time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they still
do. Gotta get my percentage. Of course they did.
Well, you were involved, too, in the earlier days of Sub Pop. We were talking before about Nirvana and L7 and just sort of like the family vibe that was at Sub Pop, people bringing all sorts of people, bringing bands in.
Yeah, I was playing in a band called Cat Butt that was on the label, and I was booking some of the other groups. I booked the first couple of Nirvana tours and the first Tad tour and a bunch of other ones. And when we'd go out on the road, and if we saw opening acts or were opening for someone interesting, we'd bring them back or bring their material back to the label and act as A&R guys.
That's amazing. I mean, how many people did you discover that way? I mean,
I brought the Reverend Horton Heat, the Dwarves, and L7.
Those are big acts. I mean, all of those bands, you know, were playing like large venues and they're notorious. Reverend Horton, he's obviously still working. You know, L7 was playing festival dates and stuff, huge shows. Yeah.
And the dwarves were like, because I was one of the few people that I answered the phone regularly at Sub Pop because I was a booking agent, so I needed to talk on the phone. Then they, Blagg actually contacted me first, and then we became friends. And then as soon as I brought them up for their first Seattle show, which was playing at a big Sub Pop festival. And this is how cocky we were at the time. We threw a 2-night festival in Seattle, and it was and we didn't announce any of the bands that were playing.
But everyone would go anyway.
That's right. I mean, and we knew it, and we weren't going to tell you who was going to play, and you had to buy tickets to both if you wanted to. And we, you know, in the end, it ended up being it was the Dwarves' first show, and Dickless played, and the Black Super Suckers before they were even just the Super Suckers when they first moved to town, and Gwar played, and the regulars, Mudhoney, Nirvana, Tad. All the biggies.
That was a magical time in Seattle.
I was on a tour in 1988 with my band Sharky's Machine. We were opening for Mudhoney and Soundgarden. It was right before Soundgarden got signed to A&M, I think they went. over to. Right. But Mudhoney was the band. There was pandemonium. They would play Touch Me, I'm Sick, and people would just go fucking nuts. We're playing these like very big halls in London. We got very, it was very nice. Someone invited us to play, you know, these gigs with them. People didn't really know who we were, but man, when Mudhoney came on, and Soundgarden was supposed to be the heavy, yeah. But man, everybody, it was a Mudhoney show.
Still is. Always. I mean, they just got done. I crossed paths with them when I was in Durham on this book tour. They were just getting ready to play to Charlotte or one other North Carolina.
Yeah,
town.
So music indoors.
They're out right now.
The yeah. Music indoors.
Getting back to your book for a second, I know a lot of it is auto. Sort of sounds sort of based on your life. Parts of it.
A bête noir.
What?
That's French.
Why did you?
It's arts and seizures, Danny.
Why did you choose to go novel instead of like you know, memoir?
Because I'm bored with rock and roll memoirs, to tell you the truth. And,
really?
And when my musical career was not that interesting, really. I don't think.
Well, not just the musical career, like the, you know, I know the Rehab Redemption memoir has kind of been done too, but you know, when it's done well, it's done really well, and I don't know, I didn't.
They are. I don't know. I just wasn't really interested in doing that, and I wanted to. And plus, you know, I'm of the belief that if you are in the sort of toxic condition that I was in at the time, that your attention to detail and dates and the order in which things happen is going to be suspect, at least.
Well, yeah, and even when you're over 40, and even right. If you were sober, it's like, what the hell happened? Yeah,
no, when I was drinking all the time, I had no problem remembering it. Anything. My memory is really, really terrific, in fact. But once I turned 40, that ball dropped right off the table.
I remember being at Social Distortion show with my friend, and I go, oh, I wish I'd seen them, you know, a few years ago. She goes, we did.
I'll tell you what, we do want to talk about your book in case we die.
I just turned 50, and I can't even remember what I'm doing here now.
Well, you need more pizza.
Well, we're going to remind you. We have going to pick something from the audio CD
cool.
from your book, and give everybody a little dose of In Case We Die. And this is Steve Earle. Reading. What are we going to hear, Danny? Can you set it up for
Steve
us?
Steve Earle's reading chapter. What is it doing there? Chapter 15. It's chapter 15. It's called
chapter 16, actually, but that's okay.
On the audiobook, but it's called "I Am in Satan's All Perfect Love." All the chapters are named after Rocky Erickson songs.
All right, so here's Steve Earle reading from "In Case We Die" by Danny Bland. It's Arts and Seizures.
Chapter 15. I am in Satan's all perfect love. I'm kidnapping you. I looked up from the bench to see Kelly Thompson hanging out the passenger window of a navy blue Mustang that had just screeched to a halt in front of me, her forefinger aimed at my head and her thumb cocked. I stood up and slowly put my hands in the air. Don't try anything stupid or I'll blow your dick off, she said, moving her sights from my skull to my crotch. You won't get much in ransom from me in that condition. She stepped out of the car and pulled back the seat, motioning me in with her spurious weapon. I climbed in back. It had been a long, bizarre night already. Why not see what else it had in store? A pretty brunette snuck a look at me in the rearview mirror from behind the steering wheel. I pushed a small mountain of clothes under the seat next to me to make room. They were all inappropriately high-end blouses and slacks, all the price tags still on them. My abductors were fashionable, don't get me wrong, but these ensembles didn't seem to be their style. You ladies been up to no good? I asked, thumbing through their obviously ill-gotten plunder. If you must know, we're on a crime spree. They both broke into laughter. Who's your friend? I asked, leaning over the seat to get a better look at the driver. By way of introducing herself, I believe she said, "Shut up and give us your cigarettes or you'll be hogtied in the trunk." I pulled out a smoke and tossed the rest of my pack between the front seats. There you go, ladies. I don't want any trouble. They were evil bookends, green eyes made even more stunning by the overcast day and blood-red lipstick, matching black leather jackets, freckled pale skin. Not twins, but a diabolical gang of two, stereophonic, heartbreaking, home-wrecking soul crushers. I put on my aviators as I sat back and watched the rest of the world go to work. I favored this life lived upside down. It was true, and that's why I hated to think of something changing, not coming back. Day was my night. Yes, bad was my good and wrong my right. But upside down has a continual need to perpetuate. Behind my shades, I was teetering on the edge of going further, off balance and unsure, yet relaxing in the gray area between a bad situation and a good time as if it were the most natural thing in the world.
That was great. Right.
That's amazing. I mean, that's really, really, really top flight. It's such a lost art, storytelling, you know, and it was such a, I think it's such a great idea that what you did here. I mean, the names on this thing are incredible. Besides Steve Earle, we name dropped a few, and the guys with Dwarves and stuff, but Amy Mann and Mark Maron, Damian Eccles is on here, John Sinclair.
Yeah.
I mean, John Sinclair, and he still does the spoken word thing. Have you seen him do his thing? It's fantastic.
I've never had the pleasure of seeing him, and I met him, but. You know, when I made my list of my usual suspects to record, and that would be, the you know, John Doe and Dave and Dooley, I never dreamed of getting Sinclair, but because he lives in Amsterdam now, but he just happened to be visiting Wayne Kramer, and he dragged him in and recorded, and it's great.
Well, you need a White Panther on your record, otherwise the literary world just will not take you seriously. What have we learned from doing a book tour versus doing a rock and roll tour? I mean, getting this rock and roll fans out, are you getting bookish crowds?
It's been, I mean, you know, it's been a little bit of everything. Mostly, like, you know, Manitoba's, a bunch of rock and rollers. It's weird, you know, in San Francisco, I got a lot of more mature yoga class ladies who wanted
part of their book club?
I guess they wanted, you know, the Q&A after in San Francisco was like, this is Portland. I'm sorry, San Francisco. Portland, you know, they wanted to discuss pornography a lot, like an uncomfortable amount of time. in Durham, North Carolina, which I thought was going to be a bust because I don't have any friends there, it was all professors from the university and their wives, or vice versa, and it was great. And
you've been selling some books.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's the big difference between a rock tour and a book tour is at the end of the night I go collect a big stack of bills. On a rock tour, at the end of the night with a book tour, you just wave at the cash register on the way out the door and say, "Enjoy."
See you in a few months,
maybe.
I hope.
That's why I love doing book. When I do the book tours, try to do them in bars.
Yeah.
You know, because then at least if you bring your own merch, at least you can, you know, get cab fare home and keep the thing
exactly
moderately sustainable, because it's a promotional tour. A book tour is a promotional tour. You're not charging money at the door. You know, someone's got to foot that bill.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I hope to do more.
So. I think you're doing it right. I think it's great. I think what you're doing is very, very exciting, actually.
So how did you hook up with Damian Eccles, who's going to be reading with you in Peabody, Mass on Monday?
Kind of like everybody else. I saw the first movie on HBO. They had a free weekend, and they used to do that. You could watch it on any TV for free. So, luckily that doc happened to be playing on the free weekend, and I saw it, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. There was, you know, but to me it was so obvious that they were innocent, and I started writing to them, and we became friends through correspondence, and then I had I got in touch with the West Memphis 3, or the WM3.org, the sort of official, the website was spearheading their movement. And I was managing the Super Suckers at the time, and I was calling them up, getting in touch with them just to volunteer the Super Suckers to participate in whatever they had going on musically as far as benefits and everything. And they really didn't. There was no benefit record in the makes or in the works, and none of that. So I just said, "This is our job," and we put out the first West Memphis 3 benefit CD. But before I was going to do that, I wanted to go down and meet with them. So I went to the prison, and we've been pals ever since.
Yeah, and that record was very successful, and the documentary drew a lot of attention to them, but that record.
The record sort of sparked the musical movement, you know, and just the sort of, it made the cause, or it helped make the cause ultra hip, and that never hurts.
No, never. Johnny Depp.
Well, I think what's great, and I think what you're doing right, again, is that your book isn't living in a vacuum. You know, with this CD, you know, all these wonderful people, you're connected to a lot of people, and you're making it more accessible to a lot of people. Because, I mean, the truth is, what we were laughing the other night, you write a book, and that's when you find out how many of your friends are functionally illiterate. You know, or just don't buy books. They're not in the habit of buying books. Like you said, they expect to get everything for free. They expect to get handed a CD or download it. But you're reading, you know, a book's, you know, it's a hardcover thing, and you sign it. I feel like great buying your book. I'm supporting it. You know, and I try to, when I go to readings, I always try to buy the person's book, because you and I, Judy and Danny, we are that person. You know, but I hate it when people come and fill the room and you put on a show and you entertain. And especially the people, like I said, who ask the most questions at the Q&A, if you're doing a Q&A in a legit bookstore. They're the ones who always walk out. They're always like, you know, like somebody really living on the margins.
Right.
And they want to take the most of your time.
Back to that Portland thing, I also had but it was obviously a very pungent homeless fella came in and sat right up front. And he asked the most questions, even more than the yoga ladies. And, of course, he had no intention to buy anything. And, matter of fact, I suspected that he was an undercover cop for a while, because he asked about the crime element of the book a lot.
Statute of limitations is up.
I'm no, who knows?
Well, it's a work of fiction.
Right.
Is there a disclaimer in the front of the book?
I hope so.
This is a work of fiction, no persons, et cetera, et cetera. We talk a lot about on the show about how New York has changed over the years.
Yes.
And it's not the same New York. Dude, where's my New York, we kind of call it. You've been in Seattle for a long time. Surely it's changed, especially since the heyday of that whole grunge thing. But Seattle's became a destination.
Well, yeah. And how it's changed most obviously to me is it's cleaned up. I mean, it's really nice down there. In the, you know, the porn shop that I used to work at is now a deja vu. So it's like a cleaned up, nicer version of what I used to work at, and the surrounding neighborhood, which was just crack and heroin central, is now kid friendly.
And so, Lusty Lady closed like a couple weeks ago.
Lusty Lady closed, and the marquee from the Lusty Lady is in the Seattle Art Museum. So.
And those poor lusty ladies are out of work, you know. It's just
lusty ladies are never out of work.
That's true. There's always a job for lusty ladies somewhere.
As ever, Judy, it's been the fastest half hour on the internet.
That's it.
Danny, remind us again where we can come see you, where everybody can come see you read and find your book and find you on the interweb.
Yeah, you can come see me at Book Court in Brooklyn on Tuesday, the 1st at 7 p.m. And then, just Google my name. It all comes up. You'll find me.
All right, on. We're going to go out with a super sucker song, something that you wrote, right?
Correct. A song called Hungover Together that I literally woke up hungover, and I had the lyrics written down next to me on a scrap piece of paper.
All right, on. Arts and Seizures.
Thanks so much for coming to see us.
Clean since 2 p.m.
Thanks
see
very
you next
much.
Week.
You're a fine desert flower to these bloodshot eyes. The sunset's got nothing on you. Each night finds me here with a 12-pack of beer. It's good to wake up near you.
For listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. So